Good morning, one and all, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. Me, John Arula, and joining us once again after far too long, unacceptably long of a break, the one, the only, Gary Chambers. Gary, how's it going?
Good to be with you, brother. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you here. Seeing your face, seeing you on the show reminds me of, I'm not gonna say like the good old days, pandemic, and it was bad in a lot of ways, but we had some good talks, and so very glad to have you back. I know obviously you've been very busy. We were talking a little bit about that before we went live. You want to let people know what you've been up to?
So you know, we've launched something called Civics for the People. It's a civic engagement workshop that I've been going around the country teaching. I'm actually excited. I'm going to be in Boston a little later this month, doing it in concert with the NAACP. And so just moving forward, making sure that people understand how they can get engaged, what are the tools that are available to us, and how you build momentum in your communities.
Yeah, look, that's awesome. And obviously I think it's important all the time, but I feel like particularly right now where, look, I'm only gonna speak for myself, but electorally in terms of like the top level of politics, it's not for me the most optimistic time. Like the optimism that I can sometimes have for the possibility of like a big public figure like fixing things is at kind of like a decade long low. So all the more reason to remember that high level electoral politics is not the be all end all of politics or how you affect change. And getting involved at a variety of different levels is, especially in times like this, probably the far better path. So, and in particular to have someone like you involved in that, helping people not only with your example, but also with training is absolutely awesome. So I'm very glad to hear that.
Thank you, brother. Just doing my part.
Thank you. We're all trying. We're all trying. It's difficult and grinding and depressing, but we're trying. We're trying. Anyway, you know what's not depressing? Schadenfreude. And I'm gonna deliver a little bit in the realm of social media in just a sec. But we have a lot that we're gonna be talking about through the course of today's show. Not only the launch of Threads, the latest in a long line of potential Twitter killers, but also really fascinating study into the origins and current state of a number of unhoused individuals in California. I obviously am in LA, where a large percentage of the nation's unhoused population lives. We're gonna talk a little bit about how some people ended up on the streets, what their life is like, and what can be done. Also, you might have noticed the earth a little bit hot lately. We're gonna be talking about that and the implications of that as well. And that's just in the first hour. In the aftermath, we'll be talking about furries. They're now facing bans in different places around the country. Barbiepocalypse. You might have thought it was just a movie, but you don't know the dark secrets lurking in the background behind Barbie and Ken. And we're gonna have a little bit of a debate about tourists who deface like World Heritage sites. How much of a hammer should come down on them? And this particular case for me hits a little bit close to home, home being the mother country. So we're gonna have a little talk about that. All of that to come. Please hit the like button, share the stream if you haven't already. And if you wanna reach out to Gary or myself, you can send us comments, tweets, super chats, and all that. We'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Gary, you ready to start the show?
Let's rock and roll.
Okay, we're gonna start off in a way that we generally do not, kind of focused on tech, but it is what it is. Let's do this thing. Threads is here, the latest in a very long line of potential killers of the Goliath that is Twitter. It's obviously sort of affiliated with Instagram. It's, you know, being developed and launched by Meta, and it's now out and popular, by the way, in just the first day, not even a full day. 23 million people signed up for this, which is a lot. That's a lot of people for 8 hours, I guess. And the time it takes for a social media site to get to 10 million users is an interesting metric. I don't know why that's the metric we use, but that's what I've got. So I'm gonna dive into the numbers. Darren Rovell accumulated some different examples. Facebook back in the day took nearly 3 years to reach that mark. Twitter took over 2, based on my quick mental math. Instagram less than a full year. Clubhouse is pretty quick. Hey, remember Clubhouse? ChatGPT just a little bit over a month. Google+. Oh, Google+. We barely knew ye. 16 days, but Threads is at 7 hours. So look, there have been, like I said, a lot of these challengers to Twitter. There was Post, and there was Mastodon, and there was I guess technically like True Central, and obviously Blue Sky, which a lot of people really enjoy. But this one has certain advantages, you know, coming to market with the backing of one of the richest people on the world, affiliated with WhatsApp and Facebook and Instagram and all that, is a big one. Instagram, which is sort of how you launch your threads, is through your Instagram account, has 1.21 billion active users. So there's potentially a lot of reach here. To discuss this, I wanted to bring on someone who I know is now a part of Threads, Gary Chambers. What do you think about Threads, about Twitter, and about all that's been happening in social media over the last couple of years?
Anything that gives us a place to get away from Twitter, I'm all for it. I think that it is a place that has just become a cesspool more than it is a conversation hub. I think that this is a smart time for Meta to make a move like this, because there's so much going on with Twitter. Twitter making a decision last week or whatever to decide, I guess you can see 600 posts when you start limiting what people can see. Now, Instagram's got its own challenges, because I'd like to be able to have all of my followers see what I post. And so hopefully that's not a part of the strategy here with this new platform. But I think that anything that opens up right now is a good opportunity. There's also a platform called Spiel that's a black owned platform that started out, that I think that people are transitioning to. You gotta have an invite to Spiel, but I think that people are really looking for a platform where they can communicate without a lot of the just bile that comes from Twitter over the last few years. It's just not a healthy place right now.
Yeah, and it's easy, I guess, to forget after last year that, like, it's not like Twitter was great 4 years ago. It already allowed a lot of harassment and driving people off the platform and all of that. But there's that, and then there's a person taking it over, obviously to encourage that and to make that easier to do. And we'll see what ends up happening with Threads. I mean, look, Facebook has had a lot of issues in terms of the activity that it's allowed on it. It's run by the same guy. So if you have fears about the content moderation, the protection for, you know, marginalized groups on this platform, I think there is historic reason to have those fears. And you brought up, you know, the ability to have everyone see your posts. It's more of like a tech thing, but I think the way that Instagram deals with its feed is incredibly infuriating, purposefully infuriating. So will they do the same thing on Threads? I think maybe I'm old fashioned or whatever. I like to think that I speak for people when I say, can we just have a chronological feed where you see everything that is posted by people you choose to follow? I don't think that's asking for too much. Like, keep your algorithm out of it. You can have an algorithmic feed, but just give me my chronological feed too. But anyway, coming out of this obviously successful launch, Mark Zuckerberg is, I think he's feeling enthusiastic. Someone had posted, Threads is brilliant, Twitter is done, Elon to be KO'd by Zuck too. And Zuckerberg responded, we're only in the opening moments of the first round here, either talking about the continued battle between the social media sites or the potential brawl between these two billionaires. He's also been stressing in his messages that he's focusing, quote, on kindness and making this a friendly place, which is good. I think a lot of people feel that way, but it's also, it's a weird thing to hear coming out of Mark Zuckerberg, a guy who has so often had a lot of difficulty in, like, even impersonating a regular warm human being. And obviously Facebook has a lot of bile of its own, Gary. So look, I agree with you. I think I want it to be a place where people feel welcomed and protected. I want it to be a place where, you know, progressives and leftists can do the important organizing and communications work that they need to do. That's an important tool to have, and Twitter has seemingly made a lot of moves in the last year to damage that. If it could be a friendly place, I think that that's great too, but we'll see in terms of content moderation what that actually means in practice. What do you think?
I think the jury's out. We'll see in a few weeks, but I think people are definitely engaging with it. They're looking for a new place. So if I'm the folks at Meta, I'm taking that into consideration and I want to be that home.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, it certainly doesn't hurt that, like, so as you mentioned, I was spilled that it was invite only. A lot of these have been. I think Post and Mastodon were, Blue Sky was invite only. It started to expand more recently, but having this come out and everyone can just sign on, and when you get there, a lot of the news sites that you might follow or websites that you follow, celebrities and athletes and musicians that you follow. Instagram, of course, is very popular. So that certainly gives them a big advantage. There are certainly downsides though, and let's acknowledge some of those. As of right now, there are no DMs. So if you want to do some sliding, you need to do it right out where everyone can see. There's no real search feature. There's no trends. Again, there's no following feed. You can't edit messages. You can't see what other users like, which might be a feature, honestly, but it isn't there anyway. So there are quite a few things that you can't do, but it's got video, which is good. I'm gonna be posting some video a little bit later on today. Are there any specific features or anything like that that you'd like to see, Gary?
I think the first thing I noticed was that there was no DM feature, and I don't know if I'm against that or not, because you know it's a lot. It become a lot, but you know, for me, I think that it's really about what I have liked about it is the continuity of it, just being able to switch over from Instagram and people being able to follow me instantly. I think I've got a few thousand followers already since last night. I think the ease of all of it is going to make it a good deal for people to transition. But I actually also don't think that I need the likes to be shown, because you know, you might not like everybody's thing if everybody can see everything that you like in a scroll on Twitter. I sure like unless
yeah.
I like things on Twitter.
Yeah, I think it's probably that seems fair. And by the way, if you know, if a lot of like toxic guys can't be sliding into people's DMs, at the very least they'll feel free to like things without you having to know about the sort of patterns of what they're liking and everything. But yeah, I'm perfectly fine with them keeping that hidden and everything. I don't think at this point you can see who other people are following, which has its upsides and its downsides. I don't know that everyone that you follow should necessarily be revealed, but sometimes it's helpful. Like if I like AOC, I want to see who she's following, because that might be good sources of information, up and coming candidates and things. So there's definitely some upside and downside. But all of what we're talking about is forward thinking and productive. I want to set all of that aside for a few moments and just dwell in how this is hurting Elon Musk. I'm a petty person at times. I'm not perfect. Gary's probably not interested in this, but I can be petty, and now I will be for at least a few minutes. With Threads being released early, in fact, and receiving millions upon millions of signups in its first 24 hours, I was just curious, how is Elon Musk taking this? And you know, I know probably well. He's got a great ability to regulate his emotions, great social intelligence, and he would never post things that would make him look bad. So I was surprised to find out that he was in his feels a little bit, and he was posting about it. Someone named Doge Designer, so you get their whole thing, posted Meta's new app was built entirely using this keyboard, Control C and V. So they're copying and pasting Twitter, which yes, they are, in fact are doing that, and it's certainly not the first time that Meta or Elon or Mark Zuckerberg has done that. But Elon Musk replies with his double crying face, which he does, I don't know, 500 times a day. And I just do want to point out that like you didn't make Twitter, Elon Musk, you bought it in the same way that you bought these other Tesla and all of that. Like, so again, it's not like you're a great creator. Also, for a guy whose like entire posting history is just taking memes that people sent to him and then posting it as if he came up with it, like the idea that he suddenly has a problem with people cutting and pasting, that seems a little bit ironic to me. But he goes on to say, it is infinitely preferable to be attacked by strangers on Twitter than indulge in the false happiness of hide the pain Instagram, which is certainly a take. That's an interesting approach to social media. And also, I'm just gonna say, I think reveals a little bit of privilege that for you being attacked on Twitter gets just to be like a fun thing, an adventure you do. You're not a regular person who, or like, you know, maybe an actress in your first movie who suddenly faces thousands of death threats from right-wing weirdos. Being attacked by strangers online, being threatened, having rape threats against you, being doxxed and everything, isn't necessarily a super fun experience for a lot of non-billionaires. I would just point that out. I know Elon Musk's super empathic, he probably already knows that, but Gary, what do you think?
I think Elon's a big crybaby who spends his money to try to have his way. And I kind of like seeing the little battle of the billionaires, the petty that's coming out of the two of them. Because at the end of the day, you're just realizing that, you know, these are a bunch of rich guys that are upset that the other rich guy's got a toy that he doesn't like. And so it's fun to watch that play out. I just hope that there's actually some benefit to us as consumers in society, and that somewhere along in this process that a pathway for a good platform that actually helps us build community in a healthy way is there. I don't mind having people have disagreements. I don't mind having different perspectives shared. I think that that's healthy, but I think that it has to be done in a way that is constructive. And neither one of these guys, when it is not about their money, give a damn about that.
Yeah, there should be a wide range of different thoughts being expressed. I also think that there should be tools to protect people. If somebody does not want to suddenly be absolutely like flooded with death threats and racist, homophobic, misogynistic bile, I think that there should be tools to protect them. I share your concerns about the origins or the leadership of both of these. And I'm gonna jump ahead to graphic 10 so we can turn to that. Because Jack, who did help create Twitter and now is behind Blue Sky, he posted this: all your threads are belong to us. So basically, when you go to download threads, this was a preview of it. This is an idea of the sort of data that would be linked to you, that's either linked to your identity or maybe collected. Basically pointing out this site is gonna collect a lot of your data, so you should be worried about it. And you can see Elon Musk being like, yeah, like that's an advantage we have. Look at all that data that they're gonna take from you. And don't look behind the curtain that, we go to this next graphic, almost all of that data is also collected by Twitter. Like, so just to be clear, it is not great for people to have to choose between one weirdo billionaire who's gonna collect and probably sell your data and a different weirdo billionaire who's gonna collect and sell your data. But it's also kind of a constant between the two. And Elon Musk knows what data they take. How dishonest, how utterly dishonest to the user base to pretend that that's not the case. And so I bring this up, Gary, because this is one of the big concerns, the possibility that privacy rights, which have not often been front and center on Facebook or on Instagram in the past, that can now be baked into the DNA of Threads. So I know a lot of people are potentially worried about that, and I think that that is reasonable.
I think any concern we had before, we should remain to have that concern. These are the same players that are at the table with these platforms. We've had the same issues. These are, at this point, congressional hearings, right? That these are real deep-seated issues that we face with big tech, and so we don't need to get off of that as we seek a different platform. I think, as a matter of fact, we need to drive down on that level of accountability, because the more platforms that exist and the more this expands, the more we as consumers, as people that are citizens, need to ensure that our privacy is protected.
This is one of the areas that some, I guess, fans of Elon Musk are using to support him in preemptively attacking Threads. I want to turn now to, I think, the first real commentary about Threads on Fox News. Take a look at this.
Mark Zuckerberg's trying to get you again. We don't know what happened at Facebook, but you go ahead and get on Threads, you'll no longer know what's going on. And another major social media platform. So just
Mark Zuckerberg talking points there.
But I'm saying, right? In Elon Musk, he's going to make sure the best he can, it's possible, the First Amendment's impressed. Does anyone think Mark Zuckerberg, the author of Zuckerbucks, to make sure certain district got a lot of money in order to vote against Donald Trump in 2020? Does anyone think he's not going to collect all of you, pull him away from Twitter, and then begin to manipulate again?
So what I like about that is that Kilmeade is for once being critical of and suspicious of like an actually a billionaire who has power and money and influence. The issue is he could only manage to finally reach that level of suspicion in defense of a different billionaire with power and money and influence and all that, who is clearly trying to affect how political rhetoric and the political conversation goes in America. Should there be concerns about Mark Zuckerberg and your data? 100%. I totally agree. But the idea that that's not a concern on Twitter is absolutely insane. We know about, like, in DMs, like the lack of privacy controls over that. That's been revealed over the past year. And him saying they're still doing the talking point, Gary, of Elon Musk cares about free speech. That was like the BS slogan that he bought the company under. We know exactly what's happened. He silenced his critics, the pervasive use of NDAs, the advantaging certain types of speech. He literally banned being able to post the word cis. And you're still spreading the talking point that this is a guy with some sort of radical lifelong commitment to free speech rights. It's BS. It should be so easy to see through.
You can't take anything that they say on Fox News serious. That's like a laughing stock of media, in my opinion. But more importantly, when you look at comparing Elon Musk in any capacity to someone who's trying to be transparent or be about free speech, nothing about this guy cares about anybody's freedom of speech. Nothing about this guy cares about free expression. As a matter of fact, he only really cares about amplifying more radical views so that he can expand chaos within our electorate. He has enough resources to control a platform large enough to reach enough people with that toxicity, and he uses it in a manipulative way all the time. And he knows that creating that chaos sends the country into a frenzy in ways that has manipulated outcomes in elections. And I think they're just trying to do it again. Hopefully, we are wiser than we were 4 years ago.
100%. You know, it'd be great for their purposes if, you know, it becomes a place where the right wing dominates. But if it's just a place that doesn't really work, like, you know, it like routinely fails, stuff gets banned. Like, if you cannot organize to challenge the status quo wins. They don't need like concrete wins. They're already winning. They just need to continue. And that sort of chaos that Gary's talking about is a great way to achieve that. So I'm gonna end by just saying, if you're curious in following us, both Gary and I are on Threads. You can see right there. That's my account. It's I think actually verified. I don't know for sure, but you should be able to know that it's me based on that recent activity. And then you can see Gary as well on Threads. So if you want to follow us, I always give shout outs to people's social media activity when it comes to the show. So in this particular case, I'll be shouting out some of the new followers as well as we transition to our first social break. We got more news coming up, but don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, everyone, thank you for joining us on a program. If you are just joining us now, please feel free to hit that like button as we jump into more news, which we're gonna do right now. You hear a lot of commentary in the news about the unhoused, very rarely coming from the unhoused. And often the right wing is driving the conversation. People like Jesse Watters, the cast of The Five, who seems to utterly hate anyone who has been through a circumstance, twist of fate, cast into a situation that almost no one would want to be in. So I like when we actually get some information from people who are experiencing this, from which perhaps to draw our actual thoughts about this population, about what should be done, what should be changed. And so we've got this new study. This is specifically about people in California. It's people 18 and older experiencing homelessness in the state. You know, full background, we're broadcasting from Los Angeles, where there is a very large unhoused community. This study was led by the Benioff Homelessness and Housing Initiative at the University of California, San Francisco. And they found quite a bit that I found to be interesting, including how people ended up losing housing in the first place. And they found that in the 6 months prior to their homelessness, the median monthly household income of respondents was just $960. Leaseholders, that means people who had a rental lease or a mortgage, reported a median of just 10 days notice that they were gonna lose their housing. Non-leaseholders, referring to those living with friends or family, reported a median notice of just 1 day. And I found that to be one of the most important stats there, because I want you to imagine that you are renting or that you have a house and you find out you're going to lose that in 10 days. Now fix that situation. How do you go about doing that? Let alone if you're living with friends and family and you're told that the next day you need to be out. That is difficult. I don't know how many people could weather that situation and stabilize against all odds, especially when you're pulling in less than $1,000 in income in a particular month. And one of the most interesting financial stats that was shared in this study was how little additional money it would actually take for many of these individuals to have not lost their housing in the first place. They say that a monthly rental subsidy of just $300 to $500 would have prevented their homelessness for a sustained period. That was a majority of respondents. A one-time payment of $5,000 to $10,000 could have done it. 9 in 10 respondents believe the housing voucher would also have staved off their slide into homelessness. And so I don't know if the right wing or even a lot of centrist Democrats would consider that an acceptable price to pay. We know that they love to complain about the unhoused and complain about it as a problem, mostly for them rather than for the people who are currently experiencing it. But this is a reminder that solving that problem does not necessarily have to cost a lot of money, and preventative solutions can in many cases be way more cost effective than waiting for people to be in that situation and then trying to help lift them out of it. Gary, I know I've thrown a lot of that out there, but what do you think?
I think, you know, when we look at where America is when it comes to this issue, no matter what part of the country you go into, homelessness is an issue, and we've got to have real concrete issue, real concrete plans to address this issue. One of the things that I look at in the richest country on earth, if we could have money that we dug in the couch, I say all the time, and found PPP loan money for every business that had an issue, said that they lost something, then we definitely have the resources to address this issue. We've got hotels that have closed down, and we've seen cities go and turn into places that they can turn into housing for the unhoused. There are shopping malls, there are old school buildings in communities that are no longer being used, that get torn down. There are properties that are owned by government that could be put into cooperative endeavor agreements with public-private partnerships to help us take some of those resources. One of the things we could do, a lot of times we give these tax incentives to businesses. We can take some of those tax dollars that are brought in through maybe a tax abatement program or a tax incremental program where entities are not paying their full taxes back to the government. You'd expand that program and allow those tax dollars that would come back in and go into the just a general fund, take that money and put it to a homelessness program with these facilities that you already have, so that one, you deal with blight, and two, you deal with making sure that money is going to address the issues that you have. Government often tells us this money's dedicated, we can't touch this. Well, there's money that we can get creative with every day. We find ways to get creative with it when we want to help businesses. We do not find ways to get creative with it when we want to help regular everyday people. And these are the people who hold up corporations, hold up businesses, make our country operate. And those are the people that we need to be concerned about. One of the things that really struck me about that was when they said a lot of these people are over 50, right? When you're looking at people that are going into an older age group where jobs may be limited for them in some capacity, and you're going into a lot of this technology advancement, these are people that we really need to be concerned about over the next 10, 15, 20 years, because this is gonna be a worse problem as people have struggled with retirement. When my grandmother passed away in 2001, her retirement check was $950 a month, right? That's what she got every month in order, or her Social Security check was $950 a month. That's what she got every month to pay her bills. How do you survive on that?
Yeah, it's impossible in wide areas of the United States, I would imagine, even then. You're totally right. And you know, when you talk about like diverting some of the money that goes to subsidizing businesses or whatever, we know that like business interests complain, especially in, you know, densely populated urban areas, about the unhoused. Well, okay, so maybe we can kill two birds with one stone. We actually help people, we do the compassionate thing, and it also makes you more comfortable operating your business or whatever. Lots of people complain about the presence of the unhoused in their neighborhoods. Well, what if we were to pay a little bit of money to stop it? Would that not be worth something? And I think that there are a lot of people who you throw this sort of plan in front of them would be perfectly happy to see that. I think that there is still a lot of empathy in America, but we also can't deny that there are some people, the people listening to like the Jesse Waters or whatever, that the solution they want, whether they will say it or not, is they want people carted into the desert, honestly. They're not looking to lift people up, get them back on their feet, help them be, you know, like fully functioning members of society, stable, secure, all of that. They want the problem to disappear in a quite literal sense. That's my fear. I want to talk a little bit more about the demographics. You brought up the point that 44% of those surveyed were 50 or older. That's apparently fairly consistent with other studies that have been done. The number of people 55 and older who saw homelessness services increased significantly, more than any other age group. Compared to the overall California population, non-white groups were overrepresented amongst the homeless, 26% of participants identifying as Black, 12% as Native American or Indigenous, 35% as Latinx as their sole racial identity or one of their racial identities, 69% as cisgender men, 30% as cisgender women, 1% as non-binary, transgender or gender non-conforming, although there was a massive interaction with age there. 6% of the participants in the lowest age group, 18 to 24, were either non-binary, transgender or gender non-conforming, which is very important to bear in mind. Now, for the actual experience of people living unhoused, not surprising, very rough in a number of different ways. 1 in 4 reported an inability to access prescription medications. Nearly half reported their overall health as poor or fair. Bear in mind, it's not too long ago that we have to remember how absolutely devastating the pandemic was for people who are unhoused, forced to congregate, not having shelter, not being able to get, you know, personal protective equipment and all that in the ways that some other people were, not prioritized for vaccines and treatments, not having access to healthcare in a lot of cases and being stigmatized in a million different ways. A lot of people in the unhoused community died as a result of these conditions. Nearly 2/3 in this poll had at least one chronic health condition, which also, by the way, might have been a causal factor in losing housing in the first place. Almost half reported symptoms of depression or anxiety. 12% reported experiencing hallucinations. 1 in 3 have spent at least one night in jail during their current episode of homelessness. And many reported like pervasive contact with police. Again, not surprising in this case. 1 in 3 said that they've lost belongings to confiscations in the prior 6 months, including personal important documentation and medication. Medication that's already difficult to get or afford in the first place, being confiscated. Imagine you're already having enough trouble getting back on your feet and losing the important documents you need to qualify for different programs, to get a job, to get housing, all of that. That being confiscated too is absolute insult to injury. Gary?
I think when you look at what people are facing in these conditions, it should make us ask ourselves deep questions about who we are as a nation. But furthermore, just ask yourself, if you live in a city that has this issue, who are you as a city? What's your neighborhood? What is your local community? Don't make this such a big issue that it's not personal, because you do have the ability to make an impact within your community and talk to the powers that be that are there and offer up solutions. A lot of times we think the people that we elect are very smart people. Newsflash, they're not the brightest people. They're not always the people with the answers, but they can listen to people with answers, and we should get engaged around these issues. There's a host of people that are engaged around these issues, but if it's impacting your local community, if you're a small business owner, call your city council member, call your state representative, get engaged with these people so that they can begin to address these issues in real time and not in a passive way where they just get to get on TV and talk about it and complain. We know the problem. What you gonna do about it?
100%. And the researchers in this particular study, they do have suggestions. We'll end with that. They say that California should increase access to housing for those with extremely low incomes by boosting production. Needing to boost production and housing is just an absolute constant issue for California. Expanding rental subsidies, bolstering housing navigation services, enforcing anti-discrimination laws. To support those dealing with mental health and substance use issues, the researchers recommend expanding low barrier treatment options for those experiencing homelessness and for those who transition into permanent supportive housing. I would also throw out there, like, to whatever extent that we as individuals can, like, there has been such a long-standing need to work against the stigmatization and demonization of people who are unhoused. Like, that's not gonna solve the problem by itself, but we are seeing this renewed effort to scapegoat the unhoused as not just those who have suffered the most by the system, but the cause of suffering in the system. And I absolutely hate to see it. That's why we return to that topic so often. So to whatever extent, just bear that in mind when you're listening to conversations and all that, we can fight back against this. We can conceptualize and communicate about these people who are suffering so greatly in a very different way. Any final thoughts, Gary, before we move on?
Be a good neighbor, talk to people and stay engaged on the issue. Don't just drive by people, smile at people sometimes too. You never know how much a smile will make a difference in someone's life.
I think that's a great point. Okay, let's turn to some equally wild news. If you think that it's getting hot out there, it's not just in your mind. Literal records are being set. The global average daily temperature on Monday was 62.6 degrees. That is the highest since modern record keeping began more than four decades ago. So as long as it's been tracked, that was the highest global temperature we've ever had on Monday. It's a new record. It is a stark reminder of how much climate change has already developed, how far into this process we are. And I just hope that people hear about this record on Monday. And as long as the record holds, they think about that, whether it's, you know, months, whether it's years, a decade, I don't know. Oh wait, there's a development. On Tuesday, the record was broken yet again to 62.9 degrees. The previous one had been years before, so it's not like we expect that the global average temperature would be going up, breaking records day after day. And the scientists reporting this, by the way, say they expect that the record will be broken again in the next 6 weeks. It is a combination of global warming, obviously, but also some weather effects like El Niño, which is not disconnected from climate change, by the way. And if you hear 62.9 and think, well, that doesn't seem so crazy, I want you to really focus on the word average. It is a global average, like across the entire surface of the world. Not all of it is intended to be so hot. Some parts of the globe are in the middle of winter, obviously. Antarctic sea ice at the end of June was nearly a million square miles below average for this time of year. That's almost four times the size of Texas. So when they say parts of the world were in winter, that's technically true. But bear in mind, winter doesn't look like it used to in some parts of the world. And so when you hit a 62.9 average global temperature, there are some places that are lower, that is true. And there are some places that are much, much higher. The overall trend though is clear and records continue to be set. Gary, what do you think?
I live in South Louisiana, brother. It was 102 degrees in Louisiana. And unlike
that's a dry heat in Louisiana, right, Gary?
We have a tremendous amount of humidity, and it is suffocating to you, man. It is, you can't walk out the house without sweating. You gotta have a towel with you every day. If anybody has a doubt in the world that the world is hot, just walk outside. That we need to do something about global warming. We need to do something about the environment. The world is getting hotter. The bears have less ice to crawl on in the Arctic. We should care about this stuff because a lot of the things that we take for granted are just gonna go away. And we won't have a society for our kids to live in. And that is what I think bothers me a lot of times with people who are just so dismissive about the subject of global warming. It's like, do you care that your kids are gonna have a future? It was not this hot when I was a kid, okay? Yep. The dogs are in misery right now. A dog can just sit there and pant his life away. It's so hot right now. And a lot of people, maybe we should talk about their pets because some people care more about their dogs than they do about other humans.
That is true. I feel targeted by that statement. But I do feel empathy for dogs and they do definitely suffer in the heat. You're definitely not wrong there. Reminder that wide areas of the United States have been in absolute heat waves. Let's call it what it is, deadly heat waves. People have literally died because of how hot it is across a significant portion of the United States. That's not the only place suffering, obviously. Large swaths of China and other Asian Pacific countries are being smothered under oppressive heat wave for more than a week. Eastern Canada is in the grips of a heat wave. Wildfires have burned more than 20 million acres and blanketed parts of the Midwest and East Coast in smoke. There has been massive heat waves and droughts in part of Africa that are leading to absolutely insane, deadly famines. Like, this is a global problem. One would think, one would hope that it would receive global attention and global solutions. And fingers are really crossed because this is not just a thing of heat. That would be bad enough. People literally die from these heat waves, as well as more intense winters. But also there are concerns in other areas too. New report saying that this should be a wake-up call for future crop failures as a result of climate change affecting like the jet stream. So there's a report in Nature Communications that says that in the US and Germany, and other food producing regions of the world, we could see a significantly lower crop yield in the future. They talk about how the jet stream can be basically, they use the word meandering. Effectively, it becomes less of a constant in the way that it has been in past decades. And it is very important for regulating temperature in different areas of the world. The ability to create and grow crops is very much affected by temperature. And so they talk about these very measurable effects on crop yields that could lead to future famine. And it is apparently very easy for much of the world to see famines in the Middle East and in Africa and just think, hey, what are you gonna do? Bear in mind, it is not going to be stuck in just those regions of the world. That should be issue enough. But if it's not for some people, it's coming to Europe, it's coming to North and South America. That is when things are gonna get really wild. It's bad enough when it's hot, but when people don't have food or the price of food is artificially raised through climate change, a lot of people are gonna wish that we'd taken this more seriously earlier. Any final thoughts, Gary?
You know, I'm just trying to keep getting my seeded watermelon, man. So I really would like us not to mess this up. Like, I don't want to mess this thing up.
100%. Okay, everyone, we're going to take our second break of the hour. And we come back a little bit more of Michael Shore talking to big fans of MAGA at a Trump rally. We'll have that and more for you after this. Okay, everybody, thank you for being here, for watching the show. Let's get into some wild stuff with more of Michael Shore's interview with MAGA people at Trump rallies, starting with this.
Well, I don't think there's really any such thing as a gay community, because in the Bible, it says in Romans 1, why people fall into perversions. And like, you should all just thank a straight person that we're all here today on the earth.
It's not about, this is not about rights. This is people telling me I have to be okay with who you are.
A lot of attention that is unwarranted. I mean, they're 1% of the population.
You know, and look at the people that want to oppress this LGBTQ or whatever the heck it is, all these transgenders and gays and, you know, I don't believe in all that crap. That's just, you know.
The transgender stuff on our children, the surgeries, the, you know, you're a cis male now and I'm a cis woman and we have to accept that label or we're, you know, what's the phobia word, transphobic or whatever, and they turn it into this hate thing where most of us would be like, you do you, leave us alone, but they're really affecting this culture and the society and we don't want America as that.
Do you think President Biden is doing that?
There's something going on with the push now.
Yeah, just to be clear, you do you, I do me is an inconsistent position to hold when state legislatures around the country are talking about little else than what rights they can now strip away, especially from trans people, but in general from the LGBTQ community. When the Supreme Court is finding in the Constitution a right to discriminate based on sexuality, you don't get to say you do you and I'll do me. You want to do you, and then you want people in power to strip away rights from the people that you fear or hate or misunderstand or whatever. There was a lot of different types of ignorance in that. And we have to understand that these people are representative of something, not necessarily humans or Americans or even conservatives. They went to a Trump rally, that makes them a special bunch, but you, Gary, are a person who you center being reasonable, being loving and all that. I will say that it is sometimes difficult when you see the hostility and hatred and ignorance and bigotry to maintain a civil demeanor with some of these people.
You know, some of these people are my neighbors. I live in South Louisiana, so I'm keenly aware of the disposition of a lot of these folks. The reality is, gay people have always been among us. They're gonna always be among us. There's always been bigots among us. The question is, are we gonna let the bigots lead us in this time? Are we gonna allow the narratives of the people who would rather take us back in many ways to the 1960s to be the people that have the prevailing voice? We know that this voice that we continue to listen to is growing and building a mob, but I believe that there are enough people who understand that people have a right to love who they love and live the lives that they choose in this country. And until we ensure that everybody's rights are protected, no one's rights are protected. There are real constitutional things that are happening. And what I would just encourage everybody is everything you see happening in the court today, Clarence Thomas is in his 70s, Sam Alito is in his 70s, Joe Biden, if he is reelected as the president of the United States, has a real opportunity and a chance to probably appoint somebody else to the court, which would give us the ability to bring some balance back to this, hopefully, or swing this court in a liberal majority. And so when I think about these types of things, I am thinking about the long term and not getting caught up on the ignorance that I hear in these bite-sized chunks, because these people are ignorant and that ignorance is going to perpetuate itself. The only way out is for us to do our jobs. I almost cussed.
Yeah. I appreciate your restraint there. And I know intellectually that you're right. I know that you're right. I maintain hope for at least some small change of the Supreme Court in the next 4 years. And you're right. We should not focus too much on these people, but we have to, in our own way, proactively counteract them with empathy, with understanding, with a willingness to look at our beliefs and see where they might be flawed, where we might have ignorance that was baked into us by how we were raised, where we were raised, when we were raised, and be willing to challenge those things, to be interested and curious, to learn about other people who have different sorts of experiences than you do, to not be scared away from that. Ignorance, like willful ignorance, is not strength. It shouldn't need to be pointed out, but for many people it must be. Empathy and a willingness to grow and develop and evolve is a good thing. The stakes couldn't be any more high. We're continually reminded of that. And so whatever ignorance and hatred and fear that they're spreading, we need to counteract it with understanding, empathy, curiosity, love, and support. You know, I went into great detail yesterday on the show about my thoughts about that. We're reminded every day of why it's so needed. Anyway, with that said, we're gonna move to a very different topic. We're gonna move from a discussion of the need for love to just something really devastating. I apologize in advance for what you're gonna see. We have an LA County deputy brutalizing a woman for daring to film him while he was doing his job. Let's jump into that.
Don't sock her. Don't sock her.
Don't be down the ground. Stop. I didn't know that. Oh,
obviously devastating footage, difficult to watch, not rare, not surprising anymore. We see it constantly. Thank God people have cameras in their pockets so they can reveal that this sort of thing happens, that there's people with platforms like Leslie Jones, that's where we saw the video spreading this. What you just saw there is Deputy Trevor Kirk of Lancaster, California. This happened on June 24th outside of a Winco food store. And you saw they were interacting with, I believe, the woman's husband. She was filming it. And he, the cop, the deputy, lost his mind over it. That is a constant in these sorts of situations. How dare you want accountability? How dare you just see what I'm doing? How dare you share what I'm doing? And they get so angry, Gary. He's willing to utterly brutalize that woman with unacceptable violence that I cannot conceive of using on literally anyone in any situation. He uses it casually, even though there's other people filming him. Like, how much protection do you have to feel that you have from consequences to be willing to do that in front of other cameras? What do you think?
I think Trevor's a piece of trash. I think that the willfulness to treat a woman this way, somebody's mother, somebody's aunt, loved one, thrown to the ground that way, you know, and as a black man, you just don't see white women thrown around like that by the police. You just do not see white women slammed by white men on the ground that way. And it is disgusting. It is something that I think should be punished. I think he should lose his job. I hope that if he's in jail, that people in jail saw the video, if he's ever arrested, because he's a piece of trash and people like him should be made an example of.
Yeah, we give these people great power, honestly, minimal regulation, minimal standards, and very often can't live up to that, even with pervasive cameras on them, still acting this way. When will they learn? How do you go through all of what we've seen over the past few years and think, you know what, when the time comes, I'm gonna be the latest person to do that? Utterly devastating. Thankfully, people know about it, so at least there's a chance of consequences. Anyway, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you everyone listening to the podcast, watching on linear platforms. We really appreciate your support. A lot more to come in the aftermath though, so don't go anywhere. Gary and I will be back after this. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.